Welcome to the We Have a Meeting podcast, where we sit down with the world's smartest thinkers to give you the actionable tools, insights, and strategies that could make your life more impactful and productive. This week, we have a meeting with Welcome to another episode of the We Have a Meeting podcast. Today, we're joined by a business transformation expert, an innovator, and one of our favorite experts in the world of sales. We've got Marcus Kauke on the podcast. Marcus, how are you, sir?
I'm relatively well. We all seem to have got COVID today, so if I'm a bit rambly, I'm always a bit rambly, but if I'm more rambly than usual, then please stop me.
Yes, if you start hallucinating during the podcast, please tell us. So for Marcus...
If you ask me a difficult question, I might have to do a Boris and start talking about making buses out of milk crates.
So for anyone who doesn't know you, how do you define yourself today and the problems that you solve for businesses?
Honestly, the last couple of years have been going through a bit of a transformation. I've been in sales 35 years. And for 17 years, I was with a very large corporate training organization, and I worked across 500 different segments of the market, and I think it was 24 out of 26 verticals. And in total, the feedback that I've had from clients say that they added at least $6.5 billion to their top line. So I know what I was working on worked, but it really got me very frustrated, because as I looked at organizations, I saw how much waste there was in the stuff that they just took for granted. Like selling cold, the insanity of it. I know you guys make your living this way, so forgive me for pissing on your chips here. But why would anybody in their right mind deliberately and focus and spend all of their money and their resources on an activity that might yield a 3-5% conversion rate, when using exactly the same people and behaviors in a hot market, you can have a 16-18x higher conversion rate and a 90x higher profit margin? It just doesn't compute. And then I look at recruitment, compensation, the total lack of coaching, burnout, attrition, turnover, churn. And I begin to ask myself the question, I always feel like the drunk uncle at a wedding that no one wants to come anywhere near, just in case he talks to them or breathes on them. Because I just feel like I'm the one who's mad, but I can't be. Is it me?
I don't know. There's a method to everyone's madness. I would never call you mad to your face. I might when you've gone off the call.
Well, I don't mind if you do, because it's probably right. But tell me this. If Jack said, Jack, you've got to speak to this person, what's the probability you would speak to him?
There's some variables in there. That's quite a big question.
Go on, hit me with the variables.
I suppose it depends on size of organisation, how easy they are to get hold of.
No. If Jack said, I need you to speak to this person, I think he can really help you. What's the probability you would take that call?
100%.
Right. And if that person, let's call him Fred, for want of a better word, if Fred came along with something that was timely, relevant, valuable, and you could afford it now, what's the probability you would buy?
Again, I would say 100%.
Right, so that's 100 and 100 versus 3-5%.
Absolutely. So when you
is
say
it me?
When you say hot market, then you're talking about, I've heard you talk about this before, it's kind of like a referral network.
Well, it goes beyond that. It's the last couple of years I've been working with some AI companies and various other bits and pieces, and what the data tells us is that the biggest deals are partner assisted and they're in your third generation of your network. So it's not you to Jack, it's not you to Jack to me, it's you to Jack to me to Fred.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Now that's where the big bucks are. Now, the reason all of the top of the funnel, middle of the funnel, MarTech, sales enablement, all that exists is for one reason.
Go on.
It's to hit the number. Well, all of us are working towards the one job, which is to hit the number. Whatever the number is that leadership has to report back to investors. Yeah?
Yeah.
That drives everything. Because that's the job to be done. And when you understand how you feed that, why are we not asking better questions? So, for example, big one for metrics. The average first meeting, how many of those would you expect out of 10 to end up in a second meeting?
Four.
Who's booking the first, Marcus? Have we put them?
Okay. Their question, no.
No.
Average well, people.
Well, that's a, four.
The average is 1 in 8, 12%.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. Now, how often have you guys, as you were learning your craft, had meetings bounce back? Oh, it's not good enough. We're wrong. Wrong target, wrong this, that, the other, no show, all that shit. And you got blamed for it.
Mm.
Yeah? But how often is it that actually leadership had a bit of a hard-on, forgive me, they felt hot and bothered under the collar for a particular segment of the market, but they were digging the wrong hole because that wasn't who their customer was.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah? 100%, you see that all the time.
Right. And then you see salespeople turn up poorly prepared without having rehearsed. They wing it. And to my mind, a salesperson turning up with a lead that the company has paid for, either through their time or through an outsourced third party, and they don't have a written plan and they haven't rehearsed, that's an act of gross misconduct. How dare you waste that many hundreds or thousands of pounds? Because you're too damn lazy to prepare.
Yeah, that's an interesting part. And we see that a lot when we work with, sometimes we work with companies who have their own sales team. So we're booking meetings for their sales team. And when you go back and ask them, let's review the meetings that we booked for you. What happened with this one? There's a lot of, I think, and maybe, and this might happen. And they really liked us. And it's a lot of wishy-washy. No, there's no kind of certainty or process that's followed. So because of that, no predictable...
And so, this tells us what?
Tells us that people aren't prepared, I suppose. People don't have the right tools or the right management or the right focus, or they're in the wrong job.
Okay, so what you've just described there is a messy, wicked, complex problem that's made up of multiple threads and that are intertwined and interdependent. Mm. But what you've got are these yucky, messy systems that have found an unhappy equilibrium. And then some tosser comes along and throws a bit of technology at it because someone's had a bit of a bright spark that maybe we can fix this. So they tinker and then they push a bit and then the whole thing starts to wobble. So now they have to invest in another bit of technology to try and fix the wobble, and it wobbles in another direction. And before you know it, they're blowing $500,000 a year on a bunch of technology spaghetti that's just complicated the whole sales process.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that goes back to the diagnostics, right? From a sales standpoint, the motivation to change. What have you done so far to fix this? And if that didn't work, why didn't it work? Why do you think this is going to be able to suddenly take all that pain away? Which is often, you know, salespeople we find don't go deep enough. Jack's got a picture of... Jack's one of his team members. Jack's got a picture of a pneumatic drill on his desk to remind him to always be going deeper.
Well, the thing that flabbergasts me is that when we buy as buyers, what we actually want is to know that the outcome that we intended is going to be accomplished. And we want peace of mind and certainty around that. But the majority of organizations do everything they possibly can to fire off our evolutionary early warning system. Because we have a program in us that looks for them versus us. Now, if someone sends me an email or makes a phone call to me and it feels dissonant, I'm not going to warm to them. But the first thing they do is they send me... there's one guy who's trying to get me to become a financial advisor, and he wants to sell me his training to do that. He's clearly not looked at my profile. He's using a bot because I've responded to him to tell him no, thank you. And then the second sequence came back. And then I told him that using a bot was probably not a good idea. And then the third sequence came back. So I disconnected and I blocked him because I just can't be asked. Now, that sort of thing, it's tiresome because you just make more noise and you make everyone deaf. Selling is a thinking person's game. Go on, Jack.
So why do you think salespeople are so weak then? Because all you have to do really is spend a couple of days scrolling through LinkedIn or look for the good podcasts or have conversations with people like yourself and the networks that you're part of, and you find the good people that can teach you. You don't need to enroll on a £5,000 a month business course. It's all there to self-learn. Why are salespeople so weak?
I think there is a bit of pushback. If we're being perfectly honest, as a profession, few of us as children wanted to be salespeople. We kind of drifted into it because we were lazy buggers. We weren't very bright. We maybe had some learning difficulties, social problems. We didn't fit in. We were freaks, whatever. And we became accidental salespeople. I mean, hands up in the room, who woke up as a kid and said, I want to be a salesman? No? Right, okay. So I've met two out of probably 50,000 that I've met. So it's a very small percentage. Now,
were their dad salesmen out of interest?
Yeah. Well, one dad, one mum. Now, next thing. We've created for ourselves a brand that stinks. Because sales comes from the ancient Norse word meaning to serve. Unfortunately, the way sales has been set up, and it's the last 40 years, and I don't blame the salespeople, they are ignorant. There's no shame in ignorance, you just don't know. But at the management level, mostly it's willful ignorance. Now that is unforgivable, because they see these things going on, they know they are hideously inefficient and don't really work, and they don't bother to ask enough difficult questions. And this is my challenge to all leadership and management out there. What are you doing to prepare for what's coming? We're going into probably the worst recession in history that certainly our economies have gone through. We are facing massive upheaval and huge disruptions, supply chains, recruitment, retention, customer churn, influx of competition, changing economics, inflation, interest rate rises, tightening of money supply from investment community, but printing of money causing all sorts of other problems. And we got World War II and a half. Yeah? Now, that was Q1 of 2022. By Q3, Q4, things are going to be a whole heap worse. We're seeing the layoffs. We're seeing the shift in the business model that the venture capitalists are now enforcing on their technology investees. And they're having to go away from revenue at any cost to they're generating profit. They've got two generations of manager who've never made a profit. They don't know how to. Everything that made them a hero in that old model makes them the villain in this one, because bringing a deal forward, that cost me thousands of dials. I'm not going to do that because that's going to eat into my profit margin. Yeah?
Yeah.
So we've got this enormous challenge here, which is we should be asking better questions. The questions I think we should be asking are, well, what's not good enough? What is it our customers say is not good enough?
Yes,
where they overservice because there's so much demand, or there has been, and there's so much supply now, everyone's really good. Even the ones at the bottom of the pile, they're overspecced. Well, is there another market there of non-customers, customers who are not yet customers, of people you could offer a pared-down version of that hyped-up service? Yeah? How can we grow our existing accounts? You know, BankSAS did a study in 2019, and they said that profit from new business, 18%. Profit from upsells, 170%. Profit from expansion sales, 1,150%.
Wow. In which sector?
Now, SaaS.
In SaaS?
Yeah.
Suppose that.
Now, doesn't that smack of insanity? Mm. When everyone's trying to get this land grab, why not get 12 really, really super profitable accounts so you don't have to go cap in hand to another investor? Okay, and you can self-fund the growth. So when you do eventually want to go out and get some money, it's on your terms, and you're using it for fuel, not oxygen. This is another big, big problem. So many people have been seduced by the lie that getting funding is some important milestone in an entrepreneur's career. It's not. For most of you, it's your death warrant.
That's where it starts.
Yeah. You're just about to sign away your IP to someone who is soulless and does not care about you, your family, or your people, or your customers, or your partners. Unless you're exceptionally judicious and lucky. But by and large, they don't give a damn. They're interested in playing the numbers and hoping that one of the 48 in the stable makes it out and washes its face enough, and two others that make it through, and that's all they need. The rest of you can burn.
Yeah, it's a scary spot, I suppose, when companies get that big, and often you lose all that magic as well, cultural magic that was probably built before that made people want to work there in the first place. One of the things that we wanted to jump into, and I know this is slightly in the weeds compared to what you're doing these days, but obviously you are... You are an encyclopedia of sales knowledge, and we have a lot of people who listen to the podcast that are sort of in the trenches. So I just wanted to kind of get your thoughts on a few different topics within actual day-to-day selling, okay, cold selling, getting people on the phone. So I wondered if you would be comfortable dusting off your old script. I know you mentioned to me last time we spoke you'd not made a cold call since 2004 or something like that.
I thought Benjamin had to do it, so he did all of that stuff. My favourite opener, if I'm being perfectly honest, is "Dring Dring, pick up Jack."
Hello.
Hi, Jack.
Yeah.
Hi, what's it about?
Who's this? Sorry, what?
What's this about?
What do you mean? You call me?
I've got your name and number on a piece of paper in front of me. You didn't call me. Marcus?
No. Doesn't ring any bells.
And who's trying to put the two of us together?
Sorry, what?
Who's trying to put the two of us together?
I don't know. Do you know?
Well, what is it you do?
Zach?
What is it you do?
We're an outsourced SDR agency and training consultancy.
Okay. I don't know who, but I think I might know why.
Go on.
What I do is I work with mid-market tech companies across their entire RevOps portfolio, and maybe someone's trying to put us together because I'm looking for outbound partners to bring into the ecosystem. Could that be why?
Yeah, maybe.
Okay, would it be worth another 2 minutes?
Yeah, okay.
Tell me a little bit about the sort of clients you work with. And that's...
Okay. I think that's brilliant. And I've never... I love that. And I think that's something that me and Zach could probably implement tomorrow. We work with a lot of younger graduates straight out of university, first sales role. Do you feel like that's something they could pull off?
Don't know. If they practice it, yeah. I mean, none of us pops out of our mother's womb able to do this shit. Okay, you've got to practice. Sales is a profession like any other. And if you were going to a heart surgeon and the last medical book they looked at was 1974, seriously, you probably want to maybe get a second opinion. Maybe they're very good, but I'm sure things have advanced a little bit beyond that and they could have done some research. So I think most salespeople are functionally illiterate, if I'm being perfectly blunt. They leave school. And I have not had a day since probably October 1986 where I haven't put in at least an hour to 3 hours of self-study.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, that cumulatively is enormously powerful. Because now I have enormous range. I'm like a German prince, educated to talk on any subject and have no useful skills. the reality is that range is incredibly important in a salesperson. Be diverse in your thinking. Read history and read well beyond your lifetime, 1,000, 4,000 years back, and look at the cycles. Read economic history, read politics, read biographies, read fiction. I know it sounds daft, but read fiction. Your imagination is probably your most important tool as a seller. It's where your curiosity comes from. So quick lesson. One of the things that I learned is that there's a framework called a transactional analysis. It's a psychological model. Or framework, and you have the parent, adult, and child ego states. Now, the parent's job is to protect and to create boundaries and guidelines and give permissions and non-permissions. The adult's job is no emotion. It's to gather facts and present them back dispassionately. It's to gather evidence and proof. So for those of you who are old enough, Mr. Spock, for those of you who are younger, I'm guessing it's probably Data. I don't know if any of you are Star Trek geeks, but anyway, that's the general gist. Then you've got the child. Now, the child, I was taught, keep your child in the car when you sell. Actually, I love having my child with me. I was also taught, keep it under adult supervision. That's good advice. Okay, now the child can be adaptive, compliant, rebellious, roll over, fight, all that kind of stuff. It can be the know-all. There's a bit of that in me, you might have guessed. Okay, but then there is the natural child. Now, the natural child is curious, autonomous, and self-directed in its learning. The best questions come from the natural child. They're simple. And this is where what young salespeople should really spend time on.
So
learn how.
Sorry, Marcus, God, I interrupted you.
Learn how to ask provocative, challenging questions from a point of genuine curiosity.
Could you?
It's not about you trying to make your quota.
Could you give?
It's because you give a damn.
Could you give us an example of? Maybe from a cold perspective of genuine curious questions from that perspective.
Yeah, give me a context.
So let's say you were selling what we do. So we're outsourced sales agencies. So typically we're brought in when people can't get in front of, let's say, enough customers or like a dream list of prospects. And you're dealing with CEO who thinks they know it all, seen it all. We wouldn't ever be able to help them. So how do we structure those questions in that way to make that person feel like, oh, not maybe seen it from this angle before?
Just out of role for a second, what tech stack do you use?
We use Ring overall.
Do you use any parallel dialers?
Connect and Sell we use.
Connect, right. Okay, fine. That's all I need. Cool. Okay, good stuff. Okay. Zach, curious about one thing before I hang up. I'm curious. Hypothetically, if you were able to, tell me something. Your average rep, How much time are they spending on an average day speaking to prospects on the list that they're calling?
Time connected to person on the phone.
Yeah, actual living, breathing human beings who's on that list, targeted and named.
Probably about an hour.
An hour, okay. Hypothetically, what if it were possible to get 6 to 20 conversations per hour, per rep?
That'd be a complete game changer for us.
Okay. Now, that would be a good question. Mm-hmm. A better question would be, what if you could arbitrage all of that and redeploy those resources and that money just on focusing on moving your customers and your prospects from your marketing and your selling platform to your buying and your loyalty platforms? So your salespeople are spending, I don't know, 60 to 80% of their working day in front of the customer. What impact would that have?
That'd be massive. I mean, getting in front of people is the be-all and end-all. That's why they're in that job.
Okay. What's your diary looking like next week?
Yeah, okay, I'm with you. So enough questions to...
You've got to think as the customer, mm-hmm. not about them. Remember, the customer has a game plan. There is an outcome, a job to be done. And I'm going to give something. I'm going to give you some reading, which a lot of you are going to think he's off his head. This is way above what I'm doing. It's not. This is fundamental to selling and to running your own business and managing your own career. Okay, this is the most basic fundamental stuff. If you learn this early in your career, you'll be at a massive advantage because there is an actual proven fact that advantage is cumulative. If you get early advantage, it's like a flywheel effect and it grows and grows and grows. Same thing if you make shitty decisions early in your career, they have a flywheel effect too. Don't make shitty decisions early in your career, okay? The first thing you do is you look for a great boss who gives a damn and will develop you and won't make it easy for you. You don't want a cushy. You want a difficult number because the more grit, grind you go through early, the more experience you have of dealing with those kind of problems later. Okay, building on Jack's earlier question about why don't they learn more? Well, probably because they're not that interested in it because they're not seeing sales for what it really should be, which is if you don't get the biggest buzz out of solving really difficult, gnarly, shitty perennial problems that keep coming and biting your customer again and again and again, get out of the profession. Because otherwise you're just order taking, or don't call yourself a salesperson. Accept the fact you just want to take orders. But real selling is about helping the customer make the best decision for themselves, whether they buy from you or not. And they will feel safer having you alongside them on their buying journey, whether they buy from you or not. Because I don't care whether people buy from me or not, because if I've helped them, my referral base is already set. Desire to reciprocate is immense. And this is why, honestly, not a single cold call since 2004. And I eat what I kill, and I eat quite a lot.
That leads on quite nicely then, Marcus. So you speak a lot about the kind of the self-work that you put in. And me and Zach are big believers in that. Like, obviously, what you put in is what you get. But in terms of the next question is quite a difficult question, and I think I know the answer to it. So if you answer it in the way that I think you'll answer it, it'd be interesting to see if you could answer it the other way. Okay? Does that make sense?
Okay.
I'll ask the question. Let's see. So, Marcus, do you believe salespeople are born or made?
I think you have a genetic propensity to certain types of skills or circumstances. And if that context switches the genes on, then those things will flourish. However, no one pops out their mother's womb able to ask questions effectively, really understanding how to listen, to read body language and read the room, read circumstance. I'm going to ruin your pitch here. I think there's a bit of both, but it's mainly nurture. The nature piece, you've got certain innate resources and they can be switched on or off and they can be developed. What I don't believe is that working on your weaknesses makes good sense. This is a big myth, and one that I wish my dad had learnt, because I spent an awful lot of time doing maths and Latin that probably I could have done without. Your strengths are your development areas. What you're already good at, you can build on. And the key is to find people whose strengths make your weaknesses irrelevant. And this is why I think going forward, if you are a young seller, what you need to be doing is starting to think about who sells before me, who sells at the same time, and who sells after me, both directly and indirectly, because you have competition that you probably don't, you're not aware of, because they also get the job done in some other way. Okay, now these people can be a fantastic route to market for you. Competitors can be some of your best sources of leads. Why don't you do a dead lead swap with a competitor, a direct competitor, where you have a friend, they screwed up a sale, but they've done all the prep. Why don't they just give you the lead and then contact the prospect and say, Jack, tell me, have you managed to solve your pipeline problem yet? No. Well, you need to speak to the guys over at We Have a Meeting. They're my biggest competitor. I hate them, but they're bloody good. Speak to them. How much credibility do I gain by doing that?
Massive.
Yeah?
Yeah, massive.
Because next time they'll refer me, and you owe me too. How cool.
Yeah. We've managed to have that relationship with a company in particular who are much larger than we are. And we are working together on some campaigns. And obviously some of the connections that you've helped us with as well have resulted in that as well, where we're perhaps working towards the same goal, but we might sell at different stages or a different part of the problem that we get introduced. So,
well, this is the really exciting thing. When you think as the customer and you think along the job pathway and all the people who have to execute it, you can be a bountiful source for lots of other businesses who then owe you big time and love it when you're successful and they can't wait to refer you. I mean, who doesn't want to go to work like that instead of scrabbling around every day trying to get 2 points of contact who'll speak to you briefly so that eventually you can demo so they can tell you, oh, the timing's wrong.
Yeah.
Oh, my life is way too short. You know, looking at me, if you're a natural, you wouldn't give me a very long time. I don't want to spend a moment of my life listening to some gatekeeper telling me, no, send an email. We don't deal with hawkers and all this other stuff, showing my age back in the 1880s. But yeah, my point being that you start asking better questions of yourself, first of all.
Yeah.
Look in the mirror. What am I doing that's causing my prospects to run for the hills? What am I doing that makes me come across as self-serving? Am I exuding buyer safety? Does everything I do put the customer front and center?
Yeah, yeah.
Do they feel safe in my presence? Have they reason to feel safe? They let me in. If I look at my best customers, why did they buy from me? Again, another question. I dare any of you go back over your last 10 deals and explicitly write down the explicit reasons the customers bought from you. And if it begins with, I think, go back and ask them. Find out. Because there you are guilty of ignorance and it's willful. That's lazy. You must know why your customers buy from you. And then you can go out and find more like them.
We had a client last week, one of mine asked, would we help them with the American market? And I asked how they were getting on in the American market. And he said, we've got about 12 companies that are working with us over there now. And similar to the way you do things, Mark, because I asked, when you went to those 12 people and said, What do we help you? What do we help you with? And who else do you know who we can help with the same thing? What did they say? We haven't done that yet. Okay, but you're looking to spend more money with me on something that you know what I mean? It's like bridging some of those obvious gaps that perhaps people just haven't thought of themselves.
That's why I've got no hair. That's my profile photo like that. That is actually just how I spend half my day when I listen to people in sales and leadership management. And you just think, why? Stop it. Just take a step back, breathe for a moment, and think, is there a better question I could be asking?
Yeah.
What can we stop doing? So let's take CRM for an example. Okay. There's a collective groan across your audience. Okay. CRM should be a tool that helps you, the salesperson, put money in your pocket. Its only function should be, or its primary function should be, to make selling easier. Instead, it's been bought so audit can happen, so higher-ups can pretend they have some form of control. And every time they tinker and they interfere, they fuck it up and lose control. They put pressure in the wrong places. They kill your pipeline. Yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Stop it. There is no need for that.
100%. It goes back to that.
We've got
to... I was going to say it goes back to that. It goes back to that point of no one's ever banged their head against the wall saying that I need a CRM. They're often thinking of more intrinsic things that are personal to them, aren't they? I need this to be more efficient, organized, work better. Yeah,
I need to stop dropping the ball.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I'm sick and tired of having to scramble around through all these different things to try and get information. Just one place for all my information. Make my life easier. I want to stop doing admin. How much of it can I dump on a machine? Yes. I'd rather play golf. I'd rather watch Netflix. I don't want to be filling out reports. And any leader who asks any one of their people to produce a report, you produce it first.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah. When you produce a hard copy, then you can ask someone else. But until that point, don't. Because you've got no idea how much work you're dumping on someone. Yeah. Mm. Now, if you can speak to 6 to 20 people an hour using your tech stack, which you can, then 40 minutes wasted producing a report could easily be a £10,000 order. Is that report worth 10 grand?
No.
Times the number of salespeople that you've asked to produce it?
No, of course not.
Right. So go boil your head and then come up with the report yourself or ask a cleverer question.
So we've come up to our first year as a business.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. I've read...
What was your best mistake?
Best mistake? When I first started off and I was in my... So I only had a month's salary to make it work in. And we spoke before, I've got children and a mortgage and there were some sleepless nights at the start. But the first few clients that I took on board were people that I just took on board for the sake of it. The qualification wasn't good
enough.
You bought
the cash flow.
Yeah, the qualification wasn't good enough. And as a result, when I took what they did to market, it wasn't as exciting and as I'd not done the qualification properly. And I learned my lesson pretty quickly not to do that and make sure that regardless, almost like treat the calls like there's thousands and thousands and thousands in my, you know, and I don't have to worry about whether they spend money or not. So that was a lesson... for life, really.
A very similar lesson with tangible upside. A company we were working with one of our MIA clients, AI clients, they had been targeting the wrong customer profile for 4 years. In 3 months, they grew 21x.
Wow. Just from
when they started targeting the right customer profile.
Gosh.
Had massive problems, obviously, because they suddenly grew and they hadn't recruited. So then they had to recruit to try and just deliver on the fulfillment side. And then everything came to a grinding halt. So that was a lesson that we learned, which is that if you can create that catapult or acceleration, you need to make sure your customer is ready and has recruited ahead of that growth curve.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they then have the customer delivery problem.
That's true. We've had people stop working with us because it's good. It's a nice story. Got made them too busy. It was a nice client for us, but then
no,
it's
an idiotic story because both of you wasted the opportunity and you deserve a good clapping.
Yeah.
But now you know the lesson. Screw it up again. Well done.
Yeah, exactly.
So it was cheap to learn then, but don't do it again.
No, exactly.
You're a very naughty boy.
Yes, I agree.
There's been a lot of learning experiences. I think you learn the most from the customers,
yeah,
don't you?
Yeah.
Customers and good kickings. Yeah, a good drubbing, best teacher. If it's easy, nothing. No value to that.
So
I mean, you should learn from your successes as well. Don't get me wrong. Make sure you do post-mortems and pre-mortems. This is the other thing. If you're a salesperson and you're going in, do a pre-mortem. Have a red team, and their job is to tear the deal to pieces, and the white team has to defend it against all opposition. And it's a 2 to 3 hour exercise. You will never, ever have such a hard time. You walk in, virtually everything happens word for word, and you walk out with an order that is 4 to 5 times larger than your normal average order value. I mean, seriously, that's a lot of prospecting you don't have to do, by the way. My motto is double the money for half the work.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm always looking for how do you do less but better on purpose, over time, and mean it. Okay, so if I can take stuff out and get the same or better result, that's a win. Yeah, because all the time, I mean, throughout my career, it's always been, how can I do less prospecting and still smash quota?
So, as we enter second year now, and obviously you've helped businesses grow, you've been part of businesses that have grown yourself, that you've run yourself. What do you think are going to be the common blind spots and things we need to be cognizant of?
You won't focus enough on building the business you intend to become. So you need to have a three-year plan, no longer than that. Given the turmoil we're going to go through, everything else will be bollocks anyway. So have a three-year outcome of the business you intend to create and be in 3 years, and work backwards in 6-month increments. And the first thing I would do is I would look at the roles and positions and functions that you're going to need in 3 years to meet those demands. Okay, and then the same in 2.5, 2, 1.5, 1, 6 months, 3 months now. Okay, then look at who you've got. You know, who can grow into the roles, who needs to be trained into them, who needs to be reassigned, who needs to be replaced, and who needs to be recruited. Where are you going to get the money? So in order to be able to do that, a certain amount of revenue will need to be generated to pay for these things over and above all the other shit that you had planned. Okay, so you need to work backwards and start working towards those milestones. And then the really important thing is give trust first. And you guys are good at this, but most entrepreneurs, I say entrepreneur loosely, founders, they're control freaks. And they never get beyond giving up power. And they can't let go and they micromanage and all that. You need to give the how to your people. You guys come up with the what, with some conversation with your customers and with your team, but then it's up to your people to work out how, and you guys coach them and fill in the 20% they can't. Yeah, coaching is your superpower as leaders and managers. And you need to coach often on the job, brief coaching as well as, you know, more structured sessions. But as a manager, you need to coach in the moment, on the job, at the point of need, and you coach what you see. So lots of management by walking around, lots of engagement with people, and you have to be vulnerable. If you start to become successful, watch out for that, your egos. So when a Roman general won a great campaign or a battle, he'd have a triumph. And in the chariot behind him would be a slave whispering, "Memento mori, tomorrow you may die. Remember, you will die." Yeah, to keep their feet on the ground, and you need someone to keep your feet on the ground and kick ass. So
that's me. Every morning to Zach, texted him, mate, today could be the day you die.
Stay humble. The more successful you are, the more humble you need to be, because hubris will be your downfall. You'll start thinking, you'll believe your own rhetoric. And how stupid is that?
Oh, yeah.
But the moment you think you're the smartest person in the room, you're in deep trouble. And if you are, get out of the room and find another room.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Encourage your people to challenge you. Recruit people who are different to you. The only thing that you don't recruit for diversity in is values. Everything else, recruit for a diverse team. Because people with range, looking at a problem, bring perspective. And they bring more well-rounded, sustainable solutions. This is another reason why, if you're a young seller, write this down, because this is came from, I think it was Dan Kennedy, and he said, your success in the future will be determined by your ability to collaborate. I'd go one step further, and I would say cooperate, not collaborate. Because collaboration tends to be at arm's length. It tends to be a bit hit and miss. Cooperation means you're working towards common purpose. You share the same values, the same outcome, and you delight in the other person's success. It's a really different way of thinking, but your management won't like it. So do it under the radar. Don't get caught. And if you need help, ask me.
That's great.
Because I'm happy to be subversive.
One of the final points I wanted to get your expertise on, we've touched on this briefly, but in terms of hiring and recruiting, we mentioned before that we've often gone for people with no experience, because it's a lot easier to train someone up with no experience than pick all the bad habits out of someone who's got 10 years experience or whatever it may be.
Yep.
So in terms of when you're looking at that person who's kind of moldable and going to come in and be a good part of the team and invest in the culture, what are the tick boxes taking away? There's going to be no sales skill there. If I'm just looking at a person,
I am looking for values. I want to understand what people do when no one's looking. Mm-hmm. Because I'm really looking for someone I can hire who is high on trust. If someone is high on competence, and I got this from Joe Mullins, who runs one of the world's most successful recruitment operations by profitability. So his consultants average 300 to 500% the billing of anyone else in their industry. Now, what he does, he hires for high trust and moderate competence, because you can train for competence. Hire for what you cannot train, okay? And values don't change. I like to look for habits, so I'm looking for things like organizational habits, planning habits. I'm looking for listening and questioning habits. I'm really interested in learning habit. In terms of their ability to adapt, I want to see that they've adapted to change, to adversity. I'm reading a book at the moment called The Innovator's Solution. And it's by a guy called Clayton Christensen, who is the father of this jobs to be done theory. Which is definitely worth reading about. But when he's recruiting managers, he makes the point that what you recruit for are not people from with the skills, the experience, the historical results. What you recruit for are people who've been through the experience of tackling the kind of problems that they're going to face in the job, whether they were successful or not. Doesn't really matter whether they were successful, but they've faced these kind of problems before, so they've gone through the grist mill. And they've had to think around the problem, so they're already aware. And that's how you build the team. That's how you recruit the salesperson. So what are the jobs that they're going to have to do day to day? And what can I find as parallels? In the recruitment process, when I build my recruitment process, it's a very detailed and thorough, because we're going to be in each other's pockets for the next 3 to 5 years at least. And I would expect them to be in my network for life. So I want to make sure that they smell nice and that we can get on, because we're going to spend a lot of time together. So I might ask what soap they use, because if we're going to have our nose up each other's asses, they may as well smell good. But the challenge here is, can they adapt? Are they coachable? Are they able to think? So I like to have exercises. So I like to experience what it's like to buy from them. So I have them sell to me by doing a proper qualification about the job. I'll have them do a presentation on a target account. Have they mapped it effectively? I want to see that they can map an enterprise and that they gather the right kind of information. But what I'm really interested in is, were they curious enough to go further and ask questions? What insights did they gather? Yeah. Then competitor analysis. Really interested in that, because I want to see how well they can map a competitor and how well they understand the dynamics. What's the juxtaposition between our proposition and theirs? A market analysis of trends and threats, opportunities. This kind of stuff they're going to do in their day-to-day job. So I'm testing to see whether or not they can learn, even if they've not done it before. I want to see, do they adapt? And I use psychometrics. I use multiple stakeholders in the, interview process. And if I can, I'll bring externals who have the job title that they would be selling to experience. So if they sell to CFOs, I'll bring in a friendly CFO.
Wow, that's a great point. Yeah, bring in a client who's a friend of the business and just see, get their thoughts. Because exactly. Buyer's perspective is key, isn't it? That's what we're going to be trading them about.
Who would have thought the customer matters for a salesperson? I mean, God, it's amazing. I feel like I've been on LSD or something.
That is a genuine. Well, that's one of those points where I could slap myself about that one. There's lots of clients who are fans of ours that we should be bringing into this process, and I would fully agree with that.
The people you serve will tell you everything that you need to know how to sell to them. That's the beauty of all of this. And you just got to ask the really basic, to have the kid, the child who's really curious and says, well, why do we do it that way? Is there a simpler way? What if we didn't do that? Because my 8-year-old is quite lazy. For years I branded myself as the laziest salesperson you'll ever know, because I am. I genuinely, if there is a way of doing less and getting paid more, why wouldn't you?
Of course.
I mean, you don't end up looking like Jabba the Hutt, by being gung ho and chasing after every squirrel. You pick your I like the big ones with antlers. The ones that fire out water off the spout. Those are fun to go hunting after. I don't want to go after rabbits.
Jack, did you have a management question that you wanted to ask Marcus in a nice way rather than the way you asked it before we went live?
You can ask anyway you like.
I think a good thing, obviously I've got a team of 5, 6, 7 at the moment, and one of the big things that we're doing is obviously like, how can we motivate them? And I'm very, very keen. But I guess there's more to that question than just motivating them, because that'd be a very easy answer. I'm very, very self-aware in the terms of I don't want to be a micromanager, but how do I push that there's a job to be done more so and get people to focus and take more responsibility rather than telling them what to do?
Okay. Are there people in the team? We'll use the presumptive question. So when you spoke to each of your team members to find the ones who wanted to move, to progress their careers, what did each of them tell you?
Well, Well, they all listen to this podcast, so I won't go through them all individually, Marcus, because they'll be listening. But no, I think as a collective, they're all...
You need to test them on it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they're all very ambitious, and they want career success and
so
progression.
What are they not entirely satisfied with that they really want to improve in their world?
Probably comes down to individual progress as a human being, where they can get stronger.
Find out what that is, and then you tie their individual personal goals to their corporate goals. So when you achieve that, yeah, then we will do what we can to help feed that. So I'll give you a great example of this. I was working with an events company, and one of the guys loved off-roading. So his company car was a Land Rover. Another one loved travel. So his reward was a trip to Petra. I mean, wow. Petra in Jordan, you know, the Nabataean place, and you go through the little passageway, and then this city's carved out the walls out of the rock. I mean, what a fabulous prize for something that was actually going to motivate him, because the money didn't. One of the really interesting things, and watch for this one, I'm just developing a program around this specifically. The number of salespeople have real problems talking about money confidently and comfortably.
Yeah.
They normally end up as SDRs because they don't like talking about money. They just want to do the front end. Sorry, teasing. My point being here, that the number of salespeople have a real hang-up talking about money, especially where they get to benefit from making the sale. Yeah, and they self-sabotage, or they struggle because a lot of money to them is not a lot of money to their customer. But when they hit their threshold, so quick exercise, okay? I'm going to run through a series of numbers. When I hit a number that you believe constitutes a lot of money to you personally, I want you to raise your hand.
Okay?
1,000, 2,500, 5,000, 10,000. 25,000, 50,000, 100,000, 250,000, 500,000, 1 million, 2.5 million, 5 million. Right, okay. So at some point, you guys hit a threshold, a ceiling, and anything over that number, oh, that's a lot of money. Yeah? So selling something of a ticket value above that, we need to work on your self-concept, your money concept. Yeah? And so... Interestingly enough, a lot of salespeople find themselves feeling guilty about being a salesperson, about interrupting, about doing their job. And most of these are not about technique. I was talking to one large enterprise recently, and they're on their fifth methodology in 6 years. It's not the methodology. It's not the technique. It never has been. If you don't get your people's heads in the right place, it's never going to work. Because that is digging a hole in the wrong place. It doesn't matter how deep you dig. You can dig all the way through to the other end. You're still not going to get your goal. So we've got to stop and think. And if we take one thing away from today, it's stop and think. And ask the basic fundamental questions. The first question, if you ever have a problem, is who has already solved this problem? Let me go and ask them how they did it. Don't try and reinvent the wheel. I wish I'd learned that 53 years ago, okay? Because I would have saved a vast amount of my life and I would have been retired about 20 years ago. Okay? The stupidest thing you can try and do is reinvent the wheel. Go out, do your research, find out who is the best in the world and go and ask them. Start a podcast if you want to interview these people and then ask them how they do it, and you end up with 407 episodes, like I have, of the best advice on the planet. Seriously, get a podcast if you're a salesperson. Just start one and interview interesting people about stuff you're interested in. To hell with the audience. Because it doesn't matter.
Because if you have totally agree. And if you have an engaging chat, then the listeners are going to find it engaging. I think there's more than one takeaway from this conversation. It's as always, Marcus, it's incredible to speak to you, and there's a lot of value in what you say, and we definitely look up to you as one of the the greats hanging over the balcony, throwing down popcorns for us, mere mortals. Marcus, if people love this and they want to find you, where can they get in touch with you?
The Inquisitor podcast, if you just hashtag The Inquisitor podcast, there's a load of stuff on there. I co-founded a group called Sales A Force For Good. So we meet every couple of weeks, and it's for ambitious salespeople, leaders, founders, and we take the gnarliest, most uncomfortable sales problems, management problems, recruitment problems, compensation, everything. And we deal with those, we tackle them, we talk about them, try and work out solutions. We're building assets, which everyone has free access to for life. So we're trying to make sales a profession that we can all be proud of, so that the next generations of salespeople don't have to endure the crap that the last couple of generations have. There's no reason for burnout. Burnout is just exploitation dressed up as another name. There's no reason why you should have to hire 10 so three might work out at the end of the year and one survives by the end of the second. That's insane. That's exploitative, and it's wasteful, and it's immoral. All of that. If you want to get hold of me, shut up, Marcus. Marcus at laughs-last.com. The_Inquisitor on Twitter, and laughs-last.com is the website, and LinkedIn.
Beautiful.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Marcus, for an incredible chat, as always.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our books are now open. Friends, Romans, countrymen, if you're looking for more sales, and that might be getting more meetings in the diary, meeting more of the right types of people, or breaking into a new area or sector, we've got you covered in two key ways. Number one, we can do it for you. We can kick the doors down, get you the meetings, and do the prospecting that you hate. Or number two, we can teach you how we do it so you can do it for yourselves, creating repeatable, predictable results. So if you're interested in either of those things, www.wehaveameeting.com and hit the contact us form. Speak to you soon.